The New Orleans Saints gearing up for a preseason game number two out in California versus the team formerly known as the San Diego Superchargers, now Los Angeles Chargers. We'll talk about it coming up. Also, Raging Cajun head coach Billy Napier caused a bit of a firestorm with his comments about donations to the RCAF. He talked about it at his weekly press conference earlier today. We'll dive into that. Also, LSU gearing up for yet another scrimmage. How's Ed O and the guys feeling about this part of fall camp? We'll dive in to all those stories and more right here on the Jordy Holtberg Show.
Alonzo, it's this one deep in the air to center. A high ride as Inciarte watches, and it's long gone into the drink in center field where the waterfall begins at SunTrust Park. That's where Pete Alonzo drowned that baseball. It's a three-run homer. It's his 39th of the year. It ties Cody Bellinger for the National League all-time rookie record.
Here's the 3-1 to Longoria. Swing and a drive. Deep to left field. It is out of here. And Evan Longoria with his 15th of the year.
Well, I think we've got some better players. I think we've got some more speed. I think that helps. Thought, Paul Gunther, his staff did a good job on very limited preparation, getting ready for the zone read. Getting ready for a quarterback that we knew was going to move the long spot, move around.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Jordy Holtberg Show, right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. I am your guest host, Raymond Parch III, better known as RP3. We got a jam-packed show lined up for you today. I'll have Nick Fondo, freelance extraordinaire for the Daily Advertiser. He'll be coming in, sitting in the studio, starting at 3 o'clock. So we'll have a bit of a co-host situation in the last hour of today's show. But we got plenty to get to here, guys. We got Raging Cajuns. We have LSU Tigers. We have New Orleans Saints and Houston Astros baseball and so much more. But we're going to lead things off today with the New Orleans Saints. Week 2 of the preseason. They already started off the preseason with a loss at home inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome against the Minnesota Vikings. They're out in California right now. They're taking part in joint practices with the Los Angeles Chargers. And they still get to do everything that they typically do, the Saints QB challenge and whatnot. And they look at the joint practices as a huge asset. Sean Payton always has, since he's been the head coach of the New Orleans Saints now for more than a decade. He tries to take part in these joint practices as much as possible. And this is what the Saints head man in charge had to say about the work that they get in these practices and how just outstanding they are. Talking about how outstanding these practices are, how beneficial they are to not only the coaching staff, but also to the players.
I've been fortunate now in 13 years where for the better part of 5 or 6 years, we always shared a practice with the Texans because we always played a preseason game proximity-wise. We've had 4 with the Patriots. This is our 3rd now with the Chargers. And I think that I think my experience with them is—it's always been a positive experience. It's always been a chance for growth because you're at that stage of training camp where you're going against each other.
Sean Payton values going up up against another team. Yes, you're going to play them in the preseason, but the starters aren't going to play this week, right? Drew Brees, number 9, he's not going to take part in these in this game, okay? Some of the starters on defense probably aren't going to take part in it either. If so, their experience is going to be minimal. So they're going to get more out of the one-on-one battles in the practices that they're having with the Chargers. Sean Payton had to say how much difference in the climate, the lack of humidity out there in lovely California compared to back here in Louisiana, has kind of changed how they do and how they approach practice.
It's significant, and so you're not breaking as much maybe as you would be at home. You know, typically we'd have 6 or 7 breaks, and I think that's good. One of the good things about coming here to work.
Sean Payton talked about how it changes how they work, the benefits of doing the joint practices, obviously. And he also talked about the approach that they have to take to have an effective joint practice, because you just can't just go out there and orchestrate a practice the same way you would during camp with your own team. There's a lot of moving parts, and there's a particular way that you can be the most effective at this, and the Saints head man in charge talked about that.
I've been fortunate now in 13 years where for the better part of 5 or 6 years, we always shared a practice with the Texans because we always played a preseason game proximity-wise. We've had 4 with the Patriots. This is our 3rd now with the Chargers. And I think that, I think my experience with them is it's always been a positive experience. It's always been a chance for growth because you're at that stage of training camp where you're going against each other.
Have that chance to go against each other in training camp. Now, we know how much the members of the Who Dat Nation love them some Taysom Hill. Okay, I went to a training camp practice a few weeks ago. There was a particular lady in the stands that was very fond of Taysom Hill and was yelling at him the entire time. Okay, and she was very disappointed when he did not come over and sign autographs. I actually think it was probably for his protection that he did not, in fact, come over and sign autographs for us Saints fans there in the stands. But Taysom Hill is intriguing. He's the fan favorite, right? He's the Swiss Army knife for this team. They line him up on special teams. He can tackle guys on special teams, block kicks, line him up at wide receiver. Sometimes they line him up at quarterback and let him throw the ball. Mainly it's the old-fashioned wildcat quarterback. He's a good athlete, and they try to find ways to get him into the offense and to utilize his skill set. And Sean Payton talked about how the former undrafted rookie out of BYU is becoming more and more comfortable in his skin as a legit NFL player.
It's kind of twofold, and it's tough because where he's excelling in one area and you would say really far down the line and one of our key contributors in special teams and also a key contributor with what we do offensively in a different role as an F. Relative to the quarterback play, I think he and Teddy have had a real good camp. And you see the progress. You see the progressions. You see a more and more comfortable player, and that's encouraging.
More and more comfortable player. And he's not the only one that's taking notice of the special skill set and the comfortability of Taysom Hill. Number 9 himself, the future Hall of Famer, Drew Brees, also says, you know what? Taysom Hill, he's unique. There's not many like him in the National Football League.
Taysom's a quarterback who just happens to be an incredible athlete, and therefore his strength and his skill set and his smarts and his toughness can be used in other areas as well, right? But I don't think there's many Taysom Hills out there.
Not many Taysom Hills out there, that's for sure. Drew Brees also, he just wasn't heaping praise on the third-string quarterback for the New Orleans Saints because, not to be that guy, but Taysom Hill is the third-string quarterback, okay? Let's be real. He's athletic, he's gifted, he's unique, he's a fan favorite, but he's number 3 on the depth chart. But Brees also talked about, for him, as a veteran, nearly been in the National Football League now 20 years, what the joint practices do, how they help out him as a quarterback and help out his teammates.
I'd say for me it's even more valuable because I'm getting a lot more reps, obviously, in these practices than I would be getting in a preseason game. And so, and you script situations, right? You don't always encounter every situation in a preseason game, but out here you're able to script, you know, play action periods and pressure periods, third down, red zone, 2 minute, you know, everything that would happen throughout the course of a normal game or the regular season. And you get to go up against a really, really good, talented team, a team that's used to winning, a team that was a playoff team last year. So I think it's good. Just it ramps up the competition.
Ramps up the competition out there. You hear it in his voice. He loves going up. And look, Drew has a chip on his shoulder. He always has. Okay? He's just a competitor that way. He holds no ill will towards the team formerly known as the San Diego Superchargers. Okay? That's long gone. He's gone on to bigger and better things. He's become one of the most prolific passers in NFL history and has won a Super Bowl. Okay? He has no ill will. Him and Philip Rivers are actually really good friends. Okay? So there's not an edge to him when he takes on, you know, the Chargers in a preseason practice or in the practices leading up to a preseason game. But the guy just loves competition. And even if it's just wearing a helmet and putting on shoulder pads out there and just running some 7-on-7 against the Chargers, Drew Brees is ready. He wants to win. He wants to win at all costs. And that's why he's one of the best leaders in the National Football League. And here's another thing that makes Drew so unique and so special, and the reason why he's lasted in this league, and the reason why he still is a leader and one of the best to do it. The guy doesn't like to take a day off. In fact, he hates the fact that his coach and the rest of the coaching staff schedule days off for the vets during training camp.
Oh, I hate vet days off. I just like taking the reps. You know, I like being out with the guys. I like getting work done. I just don't want to miss. I don't want to miss anything. And I feel like if the guys are out here, I should be out here. You know. So, but I also understand the value of rest and recovery at times when it's needed. So I'm trying to be smarter in my seasoned years.
Aren't we all trying to be smarter in our seasoned years? But look, Drew Brees and company. They're competitive. They're ready. You talk to the people that are covering the team. They're laser focused, right? They are all about the goal at hand, and the goal is to get to the Super Bowl and win the damn thing and bring back another Lombardi Trophy to New Orleans, to the state of Louisiana, and to the Gulf Coast altogether. And they're gearing up for that. Week 2 of the preseason this weekend for the Saints. We'll talk more about the Saints, and we're also going to talk a little bit more about Mark Ingram's replacement, Latavius Murray, free agent pickup from the Minnesota Vikings. We'll talk about that later in today's show. But when we return here on the Jordy Holtberg Show, my co-host has arrived. My man is juggling like 17 different things. You've heard him on the airwaves here on the Jordy Holtberg Show. You've heard him on my show, RP3 and Company. Nick Fondo is going to be sitting next to me here in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. He's going to help me take this bad boy home for the next hour and a half and some change. So keep it live and local right here. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holtberg Show right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also, you know what? You can call us on the Arco Equipment Hotline if you'd like. We'll take some phone calls, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We'll get back to the Saints discussion next hour, and particularly talking about Latavius Murray and what his role is and how he's fitting in with the Saints. And we'll talk about some LSU Tigers also coming up here shortly. But right now, it's time for me to welcome on officially my co-host today. I'm Raymond Parts III, better known as RP3 from RP3 and Company. Our next man is freelancer extraordinaire for the Daily Advertiser. You've read his work in that news publication and on their website. He's also been a guest here on 103.7 The Game multiple times. It's the one and only Nick Fondo. Nick, how you doing, brother?
It feels good to be here.
Feels good. A little bit late getting here, but for a good reason, and that's what I want to talk to you about, because you were covering the Friday press conference of head coach Billy Napier, second-year head coach with the UL Raging Cajuns. It was supposed to be just a ho-hum week here of training camp, but because of something he said at Wednesday's press conference, caused a bit of a firestorm. He had to address it at today's press conference. Set the scene for us. What caused a little bit of the stir, and then how did Billy address it today?
So Wednesday's press conference, he came in and said that scholarship players are going to be required to donate $50 to RCF, and the word he used was mandatory. That's the word that he used at the press conference. It was going to be mandatory for all scholarship players to donate $50 to the RCAF. And so
the RCF, of course, is the Raging Cajun Athletic
correct.
Foundation. That's the big booster club for the university. Okay.
And so we were all there Wednesday, and it happened, and it was a thing, but nobody was really making a big hubbub about it. And then all of a sudden, USA Today came out with kind of a scathing a piece on it, and it was number one on ESPN.com, number one on CBS.com. It was number one everywhere. And so he came in today and kind of addressed it. And basically said he goofed by saying mandatory. It's not mandatory. It's more encouraged. But what he was trying to do is sort of create a sense of gratitude for the players. Not so much saying, hey, you have to do this or you're not going to play. It was more of a, hey, look, this is what goes into your scholarships. This is what goes into you being able to play football at this university. They met the new director of the RCAF. He came in and spoke to him. And you know, it takes a lot to run a football program, and it's very expensive to, you know, kind of hand out these educations. Now, of course, you know, you got the pay-to-play and all that stuff going on and the likeness images and all that stuff, and that's a big topic for a different day. But what he was just trying to do was say, look, this is what goes into you guys being able to play. Let's show gratitude by just stepping up. It's the lowest that you can donate, the $50, stage or whatever. Let's just donate $50, encouraged more than required. But I think he misspoke when he said mandatory.
Right.
And when he said that, it made everybody go, hold up. These kids mm-hmm. are not being paid. These kids can't have jobs whenever they're playing. And now you're requiring them to pay $50. Now, the normal guy would be like, $50, that's no big deal. But to a college kid, I mean, remember back when we were in college, we were struggling to find, $2 to get a McDouble at McDonald's, to scrounge up $50 a semester, that might be pretty tough for some of these guys.
$50 is still a big deal to me now, and I'm going to be 41 years old.
Yeah, for sure.
In next month. So he said he misspoke about the mandatory. Break it down. When he said $50, was that going to be $50 a semester, $50 a year, or $50 when they left the school, either via graduation or leaving early to pursue an athletic or professional career?
So he kind of broke it down. It's going to be $50 a year. So that'd be
really okay.
If you're here 4 years, it'd be $200. He kind of broke it down, and I wish I would have had it written down before I got here. But I mean, I came straight here. But it was something like 17 cents a day. $4 a quarter. Like, he broke it down to very cheap. And again, like I just said, to the normal person, it's not that much money. To a college student, that may be something different. And he also said that he offered the students to be able to come to him and say, "Look, coach, it's $50. I can't make it. I can't do it for whatever reason." And if that's the case, if these kids are just strapped and they can't afford the $50, well, he's not going to say you have to do it or you're not going to be able to play. He also said he would step up and maybe pay the $50 on their behalf or something like that. So it's just one of those things where the intent was positive, but of course it got kind of spun into a negative, which tends to happen sometimes. But I think his intent and the reason why he did it was in the right place.
Nick, do we have any idea whatsoever how the players have responded to all of this?
So I asked them that. I said, did any players, come to you or anybody voice any concerns? And basically what he said was that in the locker room, they're basically treating it as like a joke as to why this became such a big deal. Because they all understood the message. They all understood the intent of what he meant. So none of the players came up to him and said, that it was a bad idea. None of the players came up to him and said, hey, what the hell's going on here? They all were like, okay, coach, we get it. We understand what you're trying to do. And they were all in the right mindset. So the message that was delivered to the players was received in the right way. Coach said it the way that he wanted to. They all took it positively. And then whenever all this firestorm came out afterwards, they were like, what is going on? Why is this even a thing? So that was more the tone of the room there, as opposed to, this is something negative, this is something bad. So
So they didn't – not necessarily a negative thing for them. They thought it was just all kind of silly. I think I saw someone like former Como High star Shane Vallow tweeted something out about the donation. That was on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So, it kind of blows up. But once again, understand your words, right? Because
no doubt.
Billy came out. If he would have said – this would have never even made a blip on regional or national radars if he would have came out and said, well, you know, we're encouraging – the student athletes, our players, to donate, make the $50 donation to the RCAF. If he would have said that, or said use the word voluntarily, this would have not been an issue. But because he said mandatory, and then didn't have a press conference on Thursday, it builds, right?
Definitely.
And then boom, here today. Nick, what were some of the other things that Billy Napier addressed today during training camp here with his week? Well, he has three media sessions, interview sessions throughout the week. What did he have to say that kind of stood out to you?
Well, they're getting ready for their Saturday scrimmage. And one thing that he said that stood out to me about that was that they're almost treating it like the NFL treats the third preseason game. Your starters are going to play a little bit deeper into the game. You're going to see a lot of the players that you're going to see on Saturday dress up. You're going to see them in this Saturday scrimmage. So it's kind of one of those things where you get a little bit deeper into the playbook. You get a little bit deeper into the roster. You're playing these guys a little bit longer than maybe you played them in that first scrimmage, and it allows you to get a better idea of what you're going to have once the season rolls around. I mean, the season's like 2 weeks away, so
yeah,
they're going to have to get with it. And I think this scrimmage is going to give them answer a lot of questions that they may have about their roster, and I think it's going to be really big for them moving forward.
Any injury updates?
No injury updates. He didn't want to give us an update today, right now. He was going to wait till after practice and maybe give it to us after the scrimmage, but as of today, there were no injury reports. I mean, it's a pretty healthy team. Aside from losing the center, Cole Prudham, they have not lost very many players. I mean, they have a few, you know, nicked up guys here and there, and maybe some guys maybe sitting out of practice. But as far as major injuries, you know, thankfully, they've been pretty healthy.
The main ones that have just been kind of sitting out, resting, that's not requiring anything major is Michael Jacquet, mm-hmm. who's got the turf toe situation. He may be out for a little while, but they expect him back for the season. And I think the other one was former ERAF star Eliza Mitchell. He's got a little bit of an ankle or knee situation that they're just kind of monitoring right now. So Cajuns are healthy. Billy Napier has deflated the controversy on having the players donate to the RCF. And my co-host right here, Nick Fondo, breaking it down, giving us the latest updates about the Raging Cajun football team. We got to hit a break. But when we come back here on the Jordy Holtberg Show, we're going to be having little LSU football talk. We'll welcome on former BCS national champion and Super Bowl champion, Marlon Favorite. Big Fave is going to join us right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.
You're listening to the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Yardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
That ball's drilled deep left field, and this ball is a line drive home run for Alex Bregman. Hits number 29 on the season and puts the Astros in front 2-0.
I'm going to vote for Alex Bregman in the stroke poll. One step closer to 30 for Alex Bregman. That ball's.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holtberg Show right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. I am your guest co-host, Raymond Parsh III, better known as RP3. And joining me live here in the studio is Nick Fontenot. Nick, the Stros are absolutely one of the best teams in Major League Baseball. They are a legit World Series contender. They won a World Series only a few seasons ago. But they've gone on a little bit of a skid here. They dropped 2 of 3 to the Chicago White Sox on this road trip there in the south side of Chicago. Now, to be fair, they had to play 3 games in 24 hours. Not exactly the most ideal conditions. And then they began this series with the Oakland Athletics, where it's a record-setting game. Most home runs ever hit there at Oakland Coliseum. The two teams combined for 10. Bregman had a home run. Altuve had a home run. You had a home run. it didn't matter. But at the end of the day, the A's got the best of the Astros. Your thoughts? Look, you're a diehard baseball fan, Nick. Teams go through these lulls like this against not great competition. Chicago, the White Sox are not a good ball club. The A's are a good ball club. They're in contention for the wild card. They're not quite there. They're not. If the playoffs began today, they'd be on the outside looking in for the wild card, but they're the next team there. So the A's are a good team. They're always scrappy. Do you take anything from the Astros having a little bit of a lull here with the White Sox and beginning the series with the A's or no?
No, I don't think so. I mean, they're set up so well for the postseason with their three-headed monster pitching staff that I don't think any kind of skid they may be having would hamper those expectations at all. This is the first time they've lost three games in a row since June, when they went on that seven-game skid, like from like June like 16th on, they lost seven in a row. This is the first time they've lost three in a row since then. But you know, you got Verlander and Cole and Greinke now at the top of that staff. I mean, their expectations this season is to win the World Series, and anything less would be a failure. And I don't think, you know, losing a couple of games here in the middle of August is going to change those expectations at all.
I agree with you as well. And they're so talented, right? And their lineup is ridiculous depth-wise, because you look at it, you have Springer, you have Altuve, you have Carlos Carrera, who, by the way, hit his 100th home run last night. He joins the company of Alex Rodriguez and Cal Ripken Jr. as the fastest to get to 100 home runs in their career, to begin their career. So that's some pretty good company there. We already talked about Bregman, the former LSU star. And then, you know, they find a 22-year-old in Alvarez, who is phenomenal. Is looking like he's going to be the American League Rookie of the Year. And then you look at the pitching staff. Verlander, Cole. Now, there's a little concern about Gerrit Cole. The hamstring flared up the other day. You got Greinke. And then you got Wade Miley, a former Southeastern Lions star. And then you got Sanchez, who pitched last night. Didn't look great. He gave up multiple home runs. But he did have the combined no-hitter in his first start with the Astros, so that gives you some depth. I want to ask you about Greinke. He looks okay. You don't need him to be great, though, right? And so it's, you know, I've heard some people, they're like, well, you know, Greinke hasn't looked great since he's come over to the Astros. There's a couple reasons why. A, they make pitchers change. They made Verlander change. They made Gerrit Cole change when they brought him away from the Pittsburgh Pirates and others. They make you change how you approach the type of pitches you throw. That's one thing, and they're very analytical as well. Any concern for you about Greinke? He's been good enough to win, but he hasn't been dominant. Should we maybe, Astro fans, maybe kind of scale back their expectations on what to expect from Greinke? You already got Verlander. You can't be greedy, right?
I probably wouldn't be a bad idea to scale back the expectations. I mean, when they signed Greinke, some Astros fans were like, well, this is it. You know, we've won the ring. It's like, no, you still got some work to do. And plus, Greinke coming over to a new situation, he's got to get comfortable. He's got to find his groove. He's got to create this chemistry. Now, Verlander did it 2 years ago, and it seemed like he just kind of went right in and just, you know, didn't miss any beats. You know?
He got re-energized when he got traded.
Yeah, right? So that's not, you know, that might not be the same way Greinke is. So, you know, give him the rest of the regular season to get used to his surroundings and, you know, head into the postseason. Maybe if he picks up some steam, you know, you're looking at being having a pretty dominant rotation going into the postseason. So, you know, maybe come back on the expectations a little bit for Greinke to just go ahead and, you know, be as dominant as those other guys are. But I still think if I were to pick the favorite to win the World Series, it would be the Astros.
Even over the Yankees.
Even over the Yankees. Yeah, Yankees. I think the Yankees pitching is going to end up biting them when they get there. Now, they have a strong staff, but you know, man, Verlander, Cole, and Greinke, that is just sick. And I don't see somebody, you know, getting into a seven game series and winning four games against those three guys. It's just I don't see it happening.
And the kind of under the radar guy of that whole staff has to be Wade Miley.
Yeah, for sure.
Who's been really good, and AJ Hinch is really high on him and what he can do. And then they trade for Sanchez, who's a guy who ERA north of 6 when he was with the Blue Jays. And they trade for him, and his first two starts, he was really good. Now, he wasn't great last night, but you just got another quality starter. You may not even need him to start in the postseason, but he can eat up two innings for you.
Yeah, there was something in the bullpen. There was something in the air last night with all those home runs.
I mean, there was 10 home runs.
10 home runs. Four different players had multi-home run games. Michael Brantley had two home runs. I mean, it was just – yesterday was crazy. And I was sitting there watching the game, and I think the Astros were up 2-0, and they gave up a three-run bomb, and then it was bomb, 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 back and forth. So, I mean, it was one of those crazy games. So, you don't want to lose three in a row. It's not the best if you're an Astros fan, but you know, I don't think it's anything to be too concerned about.
And the other thing that stands out to me about the Stros – Nick, is that they're just so balanced, right? When you look at them, this team, for the better part of a month, had Altuve, a former league MVP and the heart and soul of that team, on the IL. Had their all-star shortstop, Carlos Correa, on the IL. Had their leadoff hitter and home run basher, George Springer, on the IL. And there was a combination of nearly a month and a half where it was a combination of two of those three guys on the IL. Those are three all-stars.
Sure.
And they didn't miss a beat. And they do that because they're shrewd with their trades. They're shrewd with their free agent deals. They got Brantley for nothing, man. Right. He's on a two-year deal.
Yeah.
That's it. And Cleveland was like, okay, well, we don't want to pay you. And Astros were like, okay, here you go. Here's a nice little two-year deal. And he's an all-star game starter. And they find Alvarez, the 22-year-old out of Cuba, who they traded a middle reliever for to the Dodgers back in 2016. And he's going to be Rookie of the Year. And he broke Ted Williams' record for, you know, most home runs in so many games. Like, in batting average, it's just they do a tremendous job of evaluating the talent. And everyone talked about when it came to the Greinke trade, right? It was, oh, man, they gave up a lot. They had to give up four of their top prospects. Well, they kept their two top prospects in the minors. They still didn't give those guys up.
Right.
They're still part of the system. They gave up four other guys. And one guy has to have Tommy John. Okay? So you gave up four guys because you're getting a Cy Young Award winner in his prime right now. It's the same thing they did with Verlander. And it's the same thing they did with Garrett Cole. Name me one of those guys so far that they gave away to get those vets that looks like a bad move yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to have a farm system, and everybody likes to look at the farm system. When you don't have a chance to win the World Series, everybody's like, well, let's look at our farm system and see what we got coming up, and it's something to get excited about. But when you have a chance to win the World Series, nobody wants to win the minor league World Series. Nobody even knows who won the minor league championship. You're trying to win the big league World Series, the major league World Series. That's what it's all about. That's what all the farm system's about. That's what A-ball, AA, AAA. It's all about winning the World Series, and that's what the Astros are trying to do right now. And it's refreshing if you're an Astros fan to have that, to know you have, you know, an ownership group and a team that's trying to win the World Series. They don't care about the farm system. They don't care about stockpiling, you know, prospects and draft picks and stuff like that. They're winning the World Series. So, yeah, you get rid of some prospects to bring in Greinke because you're trying to win a World Series, and that's what it's all about. So I wish the Braves would do that. I'm a Braves fan. I wish the Braves would do that. They brought up all the young guys, and it didn't work out. They didn't make any moves. But the Astros are trying to win a World Series. You can't fault them for getting rid of some prospects to try to win the big one. So
you're not counting Kai Cole as a move?
Yeah, it was a good move. I mean, I don't know if it's a championship move. I think the Braves have a good team, but you know, they brought up all the young guys a year early. It worked out. They made the playoffs, so they got to take the next step. Will they take the next step? Yeah, I don't know. They're not as good as the Astros, let's put it that way.
They're not as good as the Astros, but I'm a diehard Braves fan, as you know, Nick.
Yes.
Okuna is special.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
That's a special – that's an MVP kind of guy.
No, right our there. Baby Braves, you know, Acuna, Albies, Austin Riley, even Dansby Swanson. It's pretty fun to watch all those young guys come up together. So the Braves are going to be good for many years to come. They just got to make a few more moves with the pitching staff.
Yeah, that's where they need the help with.
You know, if you get into a situation where, let's say the Braves win the pennant, and you're going up against the Yankees or the Astros, they have no chance.
They don't have the pitching.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think the Braves have a chance to do something special, maybe even, you know, win the pennant, get to the World Series, but when they face the Astros, they're done.
They're done. Astros will get back to work tonight. Game two of their set against the Oakland Athletics there in California. Pre-game is going to be 8:35, guys. That's 8:35 Astro launch. And then first pitch 9:10. You can listen to the game live right here on 103.7 The Game. And, you'll have that. And then we'll have you covered both Saturday and Sunday for your Stros right here in Acadiana. Pregame will be 2:35 on Saturday for game three of that series. First pitch, 3:05. And then Sunday pregame is, once again, 2:35. First pitch at 3:07. And know before you call the ARCO Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111 and ask, why is the start time different by 2 minutes? I do not have an answer. I do not make these decisions. I talk sports on the radio. I do not make decisions about start times. I apologize. Nick and I, we're filling in there for Uncle Jordy here on the Jordy Holtberg Show. We'll have more sports talk for you coming up next, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holtberg Show, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're filling in for the Blonde Bomber today. I'm RP3, better known as Raymond Parts III, the Bald Bomber, and beside me is Daily Advertiser, Raging Cajuns writer, high school writer extraordinaire, the one and only Nick Fontenot. Nick, let's talk a little LSU. As we are efforting getting Marlon Favorite on the show, the former BCS national champion and Saints Super Bowl champion. Preseason coaches all-SEC team came out yesterday, and the Tigers were well represented. They placed 9 players, including 4 on the first team, on the 2019 preseason coaches all-SEC team, which was announced by the league office on Thursday. The preseason All-SEC squad consisted of 3 teams and was determined by a vote of 14 SEC head coaches. Not surprising. 5 players on defense, as expected. 3 on offense and then 1 on special teams. Leading the way was first team honors was center Lloyd Cushenberry, safety Grant Delpit, cornerback Christian Fulton, and defensive end Rashard Lawrence. On second team honors, it was offensive guard Damian Lewis. And then third team was wide receiver Justin Jefferson, their best pass catcher. Linebackers Michael Divinity and Jacob Phillips. And punter Zach Von Rosenberg, which is name Hall of Fame there. Love that. Love that name. Zach Von Rosenberg. So those are your Tigers that racked up the preseason honors. And this is from the coaches. Any surprises there for you about who got honored or who didn't get honored, rather?
Nope, that looks pretty good. I mean, all those guys seem like they're going to be living up to their expectations. I mean, Rashard Lawrence is an absolute stud. Grant Delpit is going to be, you know, a high first-round draft pick. I mean, LSU is stacked this year. This is the best team they've had, definitely in the Orgeron era, probably the best team since 2011. I mean, this is a stacked team, and it shows by the honors they received yesterday.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised either. You expected Christian Fulton. Look, I think Fulton had a very good year last year, okay? I'm surprised how much preseason first-team love he's receiving, though, because he did end the season injured, had to deal with that, and, you know, he may not even be the best corner on their roster with Derek Stingley Jr. there. So, but I understand it. They're going to give it to the senior. He's worked his way back and everything like that. Rashard Lawrence makes sense. Cushenberry, first-team. Okay. Definitely Grant Delpit. He's the best player on the team, period. No love for Joe Burrow. I understand Jake Fromm, Tua, but they went, when you look at it, at quarterback, Tua got the first team offensive honors. Second team offense went to Jake Fromm of Georgia. And then third team offense went to Kellen Mond of Texas A&M. So that's the only kind of surprise that I had about the coaches' preseason all-SEC teams. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline as we welcome on our first guest of today's show. He's a former BCS national champion, starting defensive lineman for the LSU Tigers, who also would go on to be part of the Super Bowl-winning New Orleans Saints. It's our good friend. He's part of the LSU pregame radio Show. It's the one and only Marlon Favorite, Big Fave. How you doing this afternoon, brother?
Man, doing pretty good, man. Doing good, enjoying the beautiful weather down here in the great city of New Orleans, man. Hello, somebody. Talk to me, Lafayette. 337 in the building.
Marlon, I'm joined here, brother. I'm joined here with Nick Fondo. He's our my co-host for today, man. So we just want to ask you a couple questions about what you're seeing and what you're seeing out there in practice and what you're hearing about the LSU football team. They're gearing up for scrimmage number two this weekend. What do you want to see from this team, or what are you hoping to see from this team as we're in the middle of fall camp?
I just really want to take it inside the trenches. I want to see the defensive line really come into their full potential. You look at guys like Caleb Von Chaston, he's back healthy. Been hitting them weights, definitely, for sure. Just talking to him this summer, man, he's super excited to get back out there and making things happen. Brennan Fajoco had a really good year last year, dealt with some injuries, but he's coming back in full swing. I just want to see that defensive line going to its full potential, even on the rotational end. You know, you talk about a guy that's actually starting right now, Tyler Shelvin. Slammed up, looked really good, really quick, really active. So my biggest look this year for the Tigers is to see the defensive line continue to improve.
We're talking with Marlon Favorite. He's part of the LSU pregame show. He's also podcast extraordinaire. Used to be the man in the trenches. He's got a new one. We'll let him talk about that before we let him go. Marlon, tell us a little bit about the other wide receivers on this team. We know about Jefferson, right? He's already received third-team preseason honors from the coaches yesterday. We know what he's going to bring to the table. What other guys have you seen step up during fall camp at the wide receiver spot or maybe at tight end that could help alleviate some of those double teams that Jefferson got last year?
Man, a guy that I've been hearing a lot about is Pettigrew, man. They've been talking a lot about him and him developing as a tight end. Also moving, I want to see they move Dee Anderson down to tight end as well, if I'm not mistaken. So, just talking to Mickey Joseph, man, they're doing a lot of just distributing the ball and trying to get the ball around to as many people as possible. So, you know, those are a few names that really come to mind out of the wide receiving core with that leadership. Now I'll take it to the West Bank of New Orleans, man, in Algiers. Racy McMath, he's a guy, quiet, but for sure could be a deep threat for them as well, man. So, between Jamal Pettigrew, who's actually listed as a starter as well with the Tigers, we know about Jamar Chase, like you said, we know about Terrence, we know about Justin, but I just want to see a few of those other guys like McMath step up and make some plays this year, which I do believe that he will as well. So that receiving core is pretty much solidified, man. Joe Burrow has several targets he can hit, and that's for sure hand.
Hey, Marlon, Nick Fondo here. Quick question about Derek. What's up, man? How you doing? quick question about Derek Stingley. I mean, you have a freshman cornerback who's coming in with just about as much hype as we've ever seen. I had a chance to watch him in high school. I mean, the kid has all of the natural ability that you want in a cornerback, but he's coming in with some lofty expectations. What have you seen from him so far in the time you've got to see him on campus? And do you ever worry about a player coming in with such lofty expectations?
Well, in a normal situation, I would worry in the case of a freshman coming in, getting as much attention and, you know, has all this, all the stars are quote-unquote aligned for him. But in a kid like Stingley, now I know his father, actually didn't play against him, but he coached against me when I was playing for New Orleans Voodoo. So we talk about his son all the time, even when he was at Dunham. And we used to do the Cox four games of the week. I would talk with him, and man, the kid does it all. Return, play wide receiver, can cover. So I'm not too much concerned about him and all the hype because of his dad and his family. They really do a good job at A, keeping him humble, approaching the game with humility, and B, preparation. I think the way this kid prepares, the way he treats the position, is a student of the game, He's a plug-and-play guy. I think for us at LSU, and this is nothing against Greedy Williams. This has nothing to do with Morris Claiborne or any of these guys. This is probably going to be the best cornerback LSU has seen since Patrick Peterson. So he's definitely one of those guys. One day soon, he'll be wearing that seven. But he's going to be a lockdown cornerback in the SEC.
Marlon, appreciate you coming on, brother, making time for us. We got to hit a break, brother, but enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Sound like a winner chicken dinner. Y'all do likewise. Hello, somebody.
Marlon Fayright, LSU BCS national champion. That's going to do it for hour number one. Coming up, Hot Topics with CD right here on Acadiana Sports Station.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Jordy Hultberg Show right here on Acadiana Sports Station 1037 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing and the tag team duo, the Twin Towers, if you will, of RP3, Raymond Parse III, yours truly, and, of course, Nick Fondo.
It takes two of us to fill Jordy's shoes.
That's right. That's right. That's how big of a deal the Blonde Bomber is, ladies and gentlemen. Ray and Nick here filling in for Uncle Jordy. We're going to bring you home until 4 o'clock, and we're going to pass the baton off to the good brother himself, Ben Love, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports. He'll be live at Ruffino's on the River. He's got a great show lined up, as always. He's led off today's show talking New Orleans Saints training camp. They're having the scrimmages, the dual practices, the joint practices, so to speak, with the Los Angeles Chargers of San Diego County Credit Union. And we also talked about the Raging Cajuns. Billy Napier had to address the verbal snafu, if you will, that occurred on Wednesday when he said that the players, it was going to be mandatory for them to pay make a donation of $50 per year to the RCAF. He clarified that today as that is, in fact, voluntary and not mandatory. We dissected that because, Nick, of course, you were there at the presser. And then we also talked a little LSU football and had a good conversation with Marlon Fayright, former BCS national champion for the LSU football team. He was a starter on that national championship team. He also played in the NFL, winning a Super Bowl ring, rather, with the New Orleans Saints. But it's the top of the 3 o'clock hour, which means that the producer extraordinaire, the world famous, the man who has his own show every Saturday from 10 to 12 right here on 103.7 The Game, Clint Domain, fantasy football draft guru as well. It's time.
That's a questionable statement.
Oh, that's I saw your draft. That is questionable. And I saw in particular who you drafted. That's even more questionable.
Yes.
But it's that time of day. It's time for Hot Topics.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious. Decidedly better.
And you know what? We're going to go ahead and start off with one of the biggest stories from yesterday with Boogie Cousins out for the year, torn ACL. The man could just never get healthy. It's amazing to see how quickly that star has fallen. It's crazy.
He's now, Nick, in Andrew Bogut territory, right, where the body is breaking down on you and you can't stay healthy, and it's tough for the big guys. It's harder for them to bounce back from those injuries when you're hovering around 300 pounds like Boogie is. And look, the guy's made some money. Let's not pretend like he hasn't, but he did have the misfortune of being drafted by the Sacramento Kings. He chose to stay there and then was traded to New Orleans, was having a good season, suffers a devastating injury. The Pels then offer him a pretty good deal. It wasn't the max deal he was looking for, but a pretty good deal, even while they got better without him on the floor, by the way. He turns it down. No one wants to offer him a deal. He has to take the one-year deal, try to chase a ring with the Golden State Warriors, then gets injured there with the Warriors, banged up in the playoffs, has to come back for the finals. And then he signs a one-year deal. Once again, no one wants to give him the big deal. He signs with the Lakers, the team up with LeBron, and now in a basketball game, training, pickup game, whatever the hell it was in Vegas, he bumps knees and is now going to miss likely the entire season. I mean, Nick, dude, just like, woof.
I know it's radio, so nobody can see the smile on my face, but it's a gigantic smile on my face. This couldn't happen to a better guy than Boogie Cousins.
Oh, someone's showing their New Orleans Pelicans colors right now.
Oh, yeah.
Radio.
He's definitely not wearing the blue and gold, but he definitely has a blue shirt on. So it's safe to say that this man is a huge fan of the Pels, and who isn't right about now with everything going right for them. You got rid of AD, and you got rid of that big old albatross of a contract that you had with that trade on draft day. They've been making all kinds of great moves, you know, but we're gotta move over to what's causing all this, especially in the Acadiana area, with the big fight feel this Saturday. Tomorrow night, D.C., Stipe Miocic. I might as well get both y'all's opinion. Who you got?
Oh, Nick, I'm going to let you go first here.
I'm going with Northside High. I'm going with D.C.
The king of Fightville.
Always go with D.C. Never go against D.C. That is my guy. D.C. wins it.
DC going to win it by knockout, or is it going to have to go to decision?
I don't know. You know, there's a lot of talk of this maybe being his last time in the octagon, possibly his last fight.
I don't believe that, by the way.
I don't either.
I do.
He felt a little bit disrespected last time against Stipe, and, you know, he ended it with a knockout. Could go the distance. I think the only thing he really wants to do right now is beat John Jones, and I just don't see that happening. So this could be our last time watching our favorite local son in the octagon tomorrow night.
It's not going to be DC's last fight. It's not going to be. They're going to get that Jones fight done. Now, if I'm DC, I make Jones come up to me. I don't go down to 205, okay? So I make him fight at the heavyweight. I still think DC's got another fight in him or two, okay? I just do. He's just too good still to do that. I still think he wants – I agree with you. He wants Jones again. He wants a piece of that because that's the only thing that's on the resume, right? That's the only thing that Jones beat him. Absolutely. Now, Jones took, you know, failed drug tests and everything like that. For me – I think this is going to be a lot closer of a fight than people think. I think DC wins, but I think old boy learned his lesson the first time around where he thought that he was going to be able to just wrestle him and that he wasn't going to get knocked out by DC. He's not going to underestimate him. And don't forget, Miocic has the most title defenses at that level.
It would be
successful. So this is going to be a fight Saturday night.
It would be absolutely devastating if DC lost this fight.
I don't think he's going to lose. I think he's going to win, but I think it's going to be a far better fight than it was the first time around.
I think it'll be a lot better of a first fight. And, you know, Raymond, you were bringing up the fact you don't think it's going to be his last fight. You brought up John Jones. I'm not going to give my opinion on that. You'll have to tune in tomorrow because I've got a lot to say about the John Jones DC fight and maybe why he doesn't need to have that fight.
That's called shameless plug.
Yes.
By the producer.
Next
Bravo,
level
sir.
Tease. Next nice. Level
You've
tease.
Got to do this. You've got to wind up trying to promote this up. It's going to be a Hall of Fame worthy show. And speaking of Hall of Fame, you know, Nick, this is something that kind of was talked about off air, bantied about a couple, I think it was a week ago?
It was a week or so ago, yeah.
Week or so ago. Yeah. So I want to get to the bottom of this, the nitty gritty, and your distaste for Hall of Fames.
Well, the Hall of Fame has become the Hall of Very Good. I mean, you got these guys who go in who barely have, you know, careers like Ty Law. I mean, is Ty Law on the same level as, like, you know, a Walter Payton or someone like that who is just, you know, one of the best of all time? Is Ty Law, one of the best players to ever play NFL football? I just don't see it. Now, he's a very good player, but he's not one of the best to ever do it. So when you got a Hall of Fame that has become a Hall of Very Good, then it loses its luster. It should only be the guys that can get in on the first ballot. If you can get in on the first...
Oh, here it is. Go.
If you can get in on the first ballot, you're a Hall of Famer. But if it takes you 12 years on the ballot until there's finally not enough good guys to get in and you're one of the guys who gets the 75% or whatever the vote, at that point you get in the Hall of Fame, then you're not really a Hall of Famer. If you don't look at a guy and you go, that guy's a Hall of Famer. 5 years from now, he's going in. If you don't look at a guy and say that automatically, no debate, then he's not a Hall of Famer.
I agree, but at the same time, I disagree. Like, if it's the 12th year he's on the ballot, I definitely could say, yeah, it's definitely probably a very debatable thing. Maybe put a bit, like, I think Major League Baseball has, like, a certain limit you can be on the ballot, and now the NFL has had this, like, legacy project they're doing where they have guys like a Johnny Robinson get inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame. But if we're going to talk about that, we also kind of got to bring up what's going on with the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. I think there's guys out there that definitely deserve to be in there that haven't been even close to mentioned. One, I actually got a conversation with somebody earlier this week, and this is kind of just a little wink, wink, nudge, nudge to our guy RP3. Gene Bakke should be definitely in consideration. He's everything that, especially with everything he did in Japan.
That's an interesting person to bring up. But I will debate your thing on the first ballot.
Okay.
It's not that cannot be the barometer, because here's the issue that you have with that. You say that, and let's say Mike Trout, Bryce Harper right now, okay? And Jose Altuve, they all retire at the same time. Okay? They all retire at the same time. They're going to all probably go in. But you think of those, you think, okay, those guys are probably all three Hall of Famers, right? Well, the voters vote, and voting is subjective. So someone may say, you know what? You know what happens all the time, Nick? They go, I'm not going to vote for that guy because he doesn't need my vote. And then that guy doesn't get in as a first ballot Hall of Famer because someone says, I'm going to use my vote to vote on someone else to help them get in. And that's the problem that you run into. That's why you have Ken Griffey Jr. not get all the votes. When everyone that watched Ken Griffey Jr. play baseball said, that guy was one of the most phenomenal athletes of all time. Maybe one of the best baseball players of all time, without a doubt. And he didn't get all the percentage of the vote. So you have people that have strategies as voters. That's where the issue comes in, where you're going to have guys that don't get on the first ballot because voters have their own strategies. And until you fix that, you can't sit there and say you're not a Hall of Famer if you don't get in on the first ballot.
It's silly. It's silly. The whole thing is silly. If you're telling me Craig Biggio is on the same level as Babe Ruth, it's silly. It's just silly. It's just not even close. You know what
I mean? So basically, all right, and you mentioned it seven, like, all right, just let me correct you here. You brought up, you said seven Hall of Famers in your Hall of Fame. And this is just for, what is this, pro football, baseball, basketball?
So in baseball, since 1980, there have been seven Hall of Famers. Now, I don't have the list in front of me. But I wish I did, because I was just talking to you off the air, Clint. I didn't know we were going to bring it up on the air.
You knew I was going to bring this up on the air. I was wanting to instigate this entire thing.
But I'll put it to you like this. What made me upset when I was looking up all these players is that Mike Mussina is a Hall of Famer. Get out of here.
Okay, Mike Mussina, I can understand, but, you know, look at some of the other ones.
It's just not going to happen. I'll pull up my list, and maybe we'll get it after the break.
So Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame. That's all I'm going to say.
So you say it. Only seven guys that have been enshrined since 1980 into Cooperstown deserve to be there.
Absolutely. Now, I was born in 81. That's the reason why I said that. So, I'm sure there's like 100 guys before 1980 that were enshrined that should not be in there, but I can't speak on them. I didn't see them play. I'm talking about from 1980 to 2019, that's almost 40 years, there's only seven guys that should be in the Hall of Fame.
Now, I have to ask you this. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Okay. So, if you're saying there's only seven guys that deserve to get in, and I know who you root for, so which one of the three Braves pitchers that are in the Hall of Fame and Chipper Jones, who's not getting in, or are those four guys four of your seven?
Maddox only.
Wow. Not Tommy G,
nope.
Not John Smoltz, and not Larry, our boy Larry, Chipper Jones.
Definitely not Glavine. He was not a Hall of Fame pitcher.
By the way, Chipper was first ballot.
Yeah, Chipper, that's I mean, I love Chipper Jones.
Oh, but you said your requirements first ballot.
Is he a Hall of Famer? I don't know if I'd put him in the Hall of Fame. But I love Chipper Jones. So, I mean, it's a debate, you know. I have a high standard. If you want to lower your standards to get more guys in the Hall of Fame, then be my guest. But my Hall of Fame has seven guys since 1980.
Seven guys since 1980. That is amazing.
We, before this show is over, you're going to tell us your seven guys. We're going to close out before this show is done, and you're going to tell us your seven guys. Mr.
Seven.
Nick Fano. Seven. Seven guys since 1980.
That's impressive to kind of just narrow it down to seven guys.
Bold and daring. It's a bold strategy, Cotton.
Yes.
Bold strategy.
That's why we brought Nick Fondo here inside the 237 Roost
Bring
Studios.
In the hot fire. Said Cooperstown is hot garbage is basically what he just said.
And Canton, I guess, too, Nick, since we're on this topic.
Yeah, I mean, all of them. The football is almost even worse than – I mean, you got Terrell Owens. He's not a Hall of Famer.
Terrell Owens is a Hall of Famer. Come on, man.
That's enough.
Okay,
the worst one is WWE Hall of Fame. I think we could all agree on that.
We have to hit a break.
This show's gone off the rails real quick.
When we come back here on the Jordy Holtberg Show, where co-host, fill-in guest host, hate the Hall of Fames, we'll talk a little bit more Raging Cajuns. We'll hit back to what Billy Napier had to say. We'll dissect it right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holtberg Show right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. If you'd like to give us a call, you can. Our co-equipment hotline is open. 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. I am your guest co-host, Raymond Parch III, better known as RP3. Joining me live in studio is Nick Fondo. We just had a very entertaining conversation about the Hall of Fame. We're going to circle back to that, Nick, and we'll give you some time to prepare to make sure your statement of only seven guys since 1980 deserve to be enshrined into Cooperstown. And I'm going to let you do that research. And
yes, we need this.
Yes, we do need this. We do need this.
I think we can probably get to it in the next segment.
Billy Napier had his press conference earlier today. He has them Monday, Wednesday, Fridays during fall camp. And we talked about this earlier on today's show. Nick was there at the press conference reporting on it, where there was a bit of a scuttlebutt about what Billy said about the RCAF initiative. He mentioned on Wednesday that the players were going to be paying $50 a year into the RCF, donating $15, and that it was mandatory. And that caused a bit of a buzz within the community and nationally, started getting noticed by people on the Twitter machine. This is what Billy had to say. He had to clarify his statements and kind of clear the air, so to speak. This is what Billy Napier had to say about the RCAF initiative involving the team.
I just want everybody to know that the intention here is to create a culture within our building that we're grateful for what we have and the opportunity that's in front of us. And we understand and we want to educate our players about the process of where their scholarship comes from, where their cost of attendance check comes from, where the facilities that we have, the things relative to their tuition, books, fees, all the investment that goes into our athletic department and university and the support that they have given our players. And I will say this, in the last few years, we have done a lot to improve the experience of the student athlete at University of Louisiana. And that's what this is about. This is a simple gesture on behalf of our players to say thank you to all the people out there that have given back to this place and put these young men in position to where they can live out their dream of playing college football and get the college education.
College education. So he clears it. It's voluntary, but it's still an initiative that they're trying to push. Now that you hear it again, Nick, your thoughts?
I think his intentions were completely in the right place. I think his intentions were positive. I think what he was trying to do is just let these guys understand what it takes, what goes into running that football program and how much it costs to give these guys all the things they have. I mean, in the Sun Belt Conference, UL has the premier facilities. I mean, their facilities are unbelievable. When you go to other schools, they just don't have the indoor practice facilities in all of the sports, the softball facility, the baseball facility, things like that. And football runs the ship. Football is what, you know, gets the most money. And so I think what he was trying to do was say, look, you know, you guys are coming out here, you're playing football, maybe you can lose sight of everything it takes to make this happen. And so when he had the guy from RCF come in and speak to him, that was more to say, hey, look, you know, this is what RCF does for you guys. This is why you're able to have these things. And in order to show gratitude for that and for the people who donate all the big dollars, you know, we're gonna show initiative by, you know, giving $50 per player, per scholarship player, per year. And from what I hear, from what Billy said at the press conference, the
players were very receptive of it. They understood. They got the message right. And I feel like it maybe got misunderstood by the fact that he used the word mandatory on Wednesday instead of more of an encouragement. But I don't think the players took it the wrong way. I think the message was received well. So I think it's going to blow over. I don't think it was maybe as big a deal as it was made to be. But, you know, it ended up being a, sort of a national firestorm.
This is what Billy had to say. You talked about that quote, you know, about the voluntary. This is what Billy further said about the initiative being, in fact, voluntary and what he will do if they can't donate.
And I think if you spoke with our players, maybe what's out there publicly doesn't reflect what's going on here. You know, this is a group of young men that totally understood the message. Maybe it was put out there that this was a mandatory deal. You know, when I spoke with the players, I told them, you know, if they can't afford it or maybe they feel like they're stretching a little thin, they could easily come see me personally. Or if they disagree with it, they could come see me personally and I'll pay theirs on my behalf.
So there you go. I think this will quiet down now. He came out. He was out front about it, talked about it, that he misspoke. He owned it. And that, you know, he'll make a donation on their behalf if they can't handle the $50, you know, and it's a voluntary effort. I want to go on to some other things that he also said. Brendan Johnson, he gave us an update. That's the young man, the transfer from University of Texas, San Antonio. I want to say those guys are the Roadrunners. This is what Billy Napier had to say about the status of Brendan Johnson.
Well, I think just in general, having the chance to get a veteran player who's intelligent, mature. He's a really good competitor. If you go back and watch his UTSA tape, we felt like that he would give us a little bit of an experience factor there, a guy that had good coverage skills, you know. Started 12 games at UTSA last year, you know, really comfortable in coverage and a physical player that can make tackles and really has done well for himself since he's gotten here. He's well respected by his teammates. He's a great practice player, and I think he's a guy that will help us as time goes.
Nick, his status, is he's going to be able to play, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Okay. Yeah, he's going to be good.
He's going to be good to go. And it's interesting what his role is going to be and him coming in and the fact that they're very high on him. They have a lot of very good pieces there already in place, but it's interesting that they're very high, kind of glowing on what Brendan Johnson can bring to the table. Coach Napier had many other things to say. You can listen to all those. Have further dive a little bit deeper in to what Billy Napier had to say at today's press conference. Coming up on Bumper to Bumper Sports, the good brother Ben Love will be broadcasting live from Ruffino's on the River. We got to hit a break, pay a few bills, maybe get Nick a snack, calm him down from that Hall of Fame conversation that we had earlier.
I'm still rolling with it.
Oh, man, you're listening to the Jordy Holberg Show right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.
All the best guests join the Jordy Holberg Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holberg Show right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline if you'd like, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. I am your guest co-host, Raymond Parsons III, better known as RP3, and I am joined with Nick Fondo. Nick, we're going to get back to your conversation that we just had off there. I can promise you that,
yes,
brother. That's going to be happening. You will not be able to escape.
I'm trying to keep myself from not working into a shoot.
I'm not scared.
You made Clint curse, and I never hear that. And that is something to believe. And we'll get into that. And I've already told Clint he can't curse on air.
No, I know. I already know that.
Okay.
Like I said, I'm not like Cody, who worked himself into the shoot one time on the air, and that was not good.
I want to circle back to New Orleans Saints. We led off today's show talking about the Saints, Nick, and, you know, they're holding the joint practices out there with the Chargers in California. That's their week 2 matchup here in the NFL preseason. We heard from Sean Payton talking about the benefits of having the joint practices. Drew Brees talks about the benefits of the joint practices. But I want to focus in on one of the guys that they brought in this offseason, and that is Latavius Murray. A guy out of UCF, late-round draft pick that proved himself that he belonged in this league with what he was able to do first at Oakland, filling in for injured Derek McFadden from time to time and played well, at times played better than DMC. And then he goes to Minnesota and is productive there as well as a part of a platoon of backs. They bring him in to replace Mark Ingram. And this is what Drew Brees had to say about the big difference between Ingram, a beloved member of this team, a well-respected member, a guy who many people believe is the glue of the team, and that's the big question mark. Can they replace that? They can replace his production, but can they replace what he brings to the team? Because, as you know, Michael Thomas, Cameron Jordan, others, were more than mad. They were steaming mad that they didn't bring him back. We'll get to that, and I'll get your thoughts on that, Nick, here shortly. But this is what Drew Brees had to say between his old running back and his new running back.
I think they're both similar in the roles that they'll play, you know, with their offense. I've been really impressed with Latavius. I think he's played at a high level wherever he's been. And I think he adds a good element, you know, just that similar element that Mark added. And I think the complement of him and Alvin is really good. And the ability to put them both on the same field at the same time gives you a lot of options.
Gives you options. If you're Drew Brees, it's another piece, right? It's another piece on the board. And someone that can catch the ball because Murray can catch the ball out of the backfield. My question to you, Nick, is not how he's incorporated himself into this offense. He's a good player. He's a humble guy. He has a rep of being a good teammate. Can they actually replace what Mark Ingram brought to this team? And it has nothing to do with what he did on the field.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any way you replace a locker room guy like Ingram. I think it was Ingram and Cam Jordan. Those guys were the heart of the locker room. Ingram was the guy who held everything together, helped Alvin Kamara come along and be the guy that he is. I think Ingram was a tremendous teammate to Alvin Kamara and the rest of the offense. So do you replace that? I just don't think there's any way you replace that. On the field, I actually like Murray. I think he's a really good player. I think he's even better than Ingram. I think he's going to do some things that Ingram couldn't do. He's a bigger guy than Ingram, and he's going to be able to, you know, maybe explode a little bit faster than Ingram could.
A little bit more dynamic?
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know, Ingram kind of lacked a little bit when it came to speed and stuff like that, and I'm only talking trash on him because he's not on the team anymore. Believe me, I loved Ingram when he was here. He was my guy. But, you know, he sometimes was maybe not as fast as you want him to be. I think Murray's going to be a little quicker. So, like, on the field, the game, the actual thing that we care about on Sundays, I think the Saints are going to be better with Murray. It's that variable aspect, that locker room thing that we're going to miss with Ingram that I just don't think Murray's going to be able to duplicate.
And he may try. I mean, he may quickly endear himself to his teammates, but it's always – that's my only concern about the Saints this year is when they made those decisions not to pay guys before that were part of the Super Bowl roster and they wanted to part ways with them, Malcolm Jenkins, Darren Sproles, others, that didn't work out too well. Like, they lost the guys that held the fabric together, right? Now, they still had Drew Brees, and it still, they lost something. They lost a little bit of their soul, so to speak, of that team by letting Jenkins go to the Eagles and letting Darren Sproles go to the Eagles and making some shrewd moves that they had to do as a front office, right? And that's what they did. And they were able to rebound that with great drafting, good free agencies, and everything like that. I would have paid Ingram. I don't think the money was that far off, okay? I just think they had a number that they were not going to pass.
Yeah.
And the Saints drew a hard line in the sand, and Ingram's agent was like, no, we can go get something else, something somewhere else. And his agent rolled the dice, and they lost.
Yeah.
Now, he's still going to get paid in Baltimore, and he's going to get the ball a ton, right? But it was just disappointing to see because you wanted – because he was part of this rebuild after the Super Bowl, and they'd gotten so close, and for him not to be there, it's going to be one of those things where it's disappointing because you wanted him to be part of it because, once again, it was more what he brought to the team and brought to the locker room than it was him scoring touchdowns at the goal line for me.
Right.
But I agree with you. I think Latavius Murray does bring – he's going to be a little bit more dynamic. even though he's bigger and stronger. Ingram was a little bit shorter, more like a bowling ball, right? Murray's big guy, yeah. And he's big, yeah. And he's fast, which is a great combination. Latavius Murray was asked out there in California about his excitement level about being in this offense and about the opportunities that he's going to be receiving by being in this offense. And this is what the Saints' new offensive weapon had to say.
I think the opportunities that I'll have here, more so than I have in the past anywhere else, I think they'll be there because of the offense and mainly because of number nine out there. He's gonna make his reads and he's going to get the ball into a receiver's hands, you know, probably quicker than any quarterback that I've played with. And, you know, that can be very beneficial, not taking a negative play, getting something, you know, making something out of nothing.
You can tell he's excited. And if you're Latavius Murray, Nick, you've played in Oakland and Minnesota. Woof.
Yeah.
With the quarterbacks that they've had there. Okay. Now you get to play with Drew freaking Brees. And you get to be in an offense orchestrated by Sean Payton. Latavius Murray is smart. The Saints did their research on him. That's why they went after him. That's why they targeted him. Not only does he have the natural skill set, but he's also smart. And he can pick up the playbook. If you're him, man, you got to be thinking to yourself, I am truly blessed that I get an opportunity to be here and be the backup to Alvin Kamara in this offense.
Yeah, and an opportunity to give Drew Brees a second ring, which I think is the focus of the team. I think that they were really focused on it last year, and I think that they really thought they were going to get Drew Brees that second ring, and it didn't work out. I think this year is the same thing. I think until Brees hangs it up, that's the goal of the team. And I remember last year hearing an interview with Cam Jordan who said, you know, if your goal is not getting Drew Brees a second ring, we don't want you here. Like, that's what we're here for. It wasn't even about getting, you know, me a ring. It's about getting Drew his second one. And if that's not what you're here for, we don't want you. I think when they brought guys in like Ndamukong Suh last year for the interview or whatever, that's not what he was about. So they didn't bring him in. So I think maybe they piggyback on that for this year and have the same focus this year, bringing a guy like Latavius Murray, bringing a guy like Jared Cook. Those guys have to be on board with the central focus of the team and a leader like Cam Jordan, you know, saying things like that. So I don't think they bring a guy like Murray in if that's not his focus, you know, maybe putting yourself aside for the betterment of the team. And I think, like you said, Murray is going to be a more dynamic running back than Mark Ingram is, and they're going to have to work on the locker room thing.
And I don't think it's going to be something that he's going to have to sub up, because I think that'd be too of an awkward situation. It would be false. You hadn't earned it because you haven't been here.
For sure.
But as long as he's a good soldier, so to speak, and is right along with it, what's going to have to happen, though, is someone else is going to have to step up into that Ingram spot. It can't be Murray.
Correct.
It can't be him.
No.
Is it Kamara, now that he's a third year in the league? Is it Michael Thomas? Is it one of those other younger guys that were befriended and mentored by Ingram that's going to say, okay, now it's on me, right? Now it's my job to be that guy, to be in the locker room, to be the quote-unquote glue guy, so to speak. This is what Murray also had to say about, you know, that he's not going to compare Brees to any other quarterbacks that he's ever played with.
No, I won't compare him. I think, you know, no disrespect to any of the guys that I've played with, but I think everybody here can agree he's in a league of his own with some of the others that are playing right now today.
League of his own, which I would absolutely agree with. So, Saints are out there, once again, second week of the preseason. Nick, I'll ask you this because you didn't get to chime in with the Saints conversation to start off the show. Second week of the preseason, starters aren't going to get any reps. So what are you going to be looking for when you watch this preseason game this weekend?
I'm looking at offensive line, see if we can get some depth there because, man, we seem to always be banged up. And I say we because I'm a gigantic Saints fan.
You are a member of the Houdini.
I'm not a part of the team. I don't play for the Saints. But, no, I think the offensive line for the Saints is always banged up. You know, they always go into big games with a key member of the line that might not be able to go, you know, in the middle of the season, week 8, week 9. So if you watch that offensive line in the preseason, those are the guys that are going to be your 2 deep and your 3 deep and your practice squad guys that might get a call up on a random week, you know, week 8 where you're really banged up. You might have a guy that you see tonight or in the preseason game that might – be playing on a Sunday that you don't even know his name right now. You might be, you know, one of the two deep guys. So that's what I'll be looking for. Offensive line, defensive depth, and things like that. I mean, you never know which one of these guys that you don't even know their names or you haven't even heard of them, and they're doing something in the preseason that might end up playing on Sunday, and they're going to be an important part of a game for the Saints to win.
Yeah, and I'll be interested. I'm like you, offensive line. I think you got your center. I think you got Eric McCoy. He's your guy. I think he's legit.
I hope so.
And your depth is going to come from Easton, the signee from Minnesota Vikings, who was injured all of last year, but he's versatile. He can play guard and center for you. I think that's also an insurance policy in case you want to part ways with Andres Pete in the offseason and not bring him back or maybe possibly trade him. Okay, so I'm interested to see the offensive line. I got to see more of a pass rush. Because in the preseason opener against the Minnesota Vikings, it was non-existent.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say it, it's not too early to make a decision because I always say this, you got to give a player 3 years, in my opinion, because I think it takes that long. Not everyone is special or, in your opinion, first ballot Hall of Famer right out the gates, right? Some guys have to learn. Look at Cam Jordan. He struggled for the first year and a half. Maybe. He started piecing it together at the end of year two, then turned a corner year three for sure. Mark Ingram the same way. Mark Ingram looked like a bust, right? He turned a corner. Some guys need a little bit more time just to adjust to the NFL game. Mm-hmm. It's just that's how it is. So I'm not one to jump on someone like that. But you have to see some strides by Marcus Davenport because you spent everything that you did to get him, to trade up for him last year. And he had an okay year. He was inconsistent, as you expected a rookie pass rusher to be in the NFL. And then he got injured. So he's coming off an injury, and he's coming off a so-so rookie campaign. I did not see him on the field at all. I saw him get blown up, actually, in a preseason game. Not a great look. So I don't need him to be Cam Jordan right now. And I don't need him to be DeMarcus Ware, who he was compared to because they both came from a small school. DeMarcus Ware obviously went to Troy. But I need to see some improvement from him, and I need to see him some improvement from the front seven.
Definitely. Marcus Davenport has to take that next step. He's a guy that you got to see, you know, be a first-round pick. Be a guy that you're like, okay, yeah, we did spend a lot to get him, but he's producing on the field, and it's worth it. And it has to be a piece to this championship team because this is a team similar to the Astros in baseball. This is a team that's trying to win a championship. If they don't win a Super Bowl – you know, we're not trying to make the playoffs. It's not, you're not trying to get to a championship game. You're trying to win the Super Bowl. And this team, I know a lot of people don't like to hear about the window closing, but it's closing. I mean, Breeze is 40 years old. He's not going to be, you know, a high-level quarterback for another 5 or 10 years.
The same thing will happen in New England. Tom Brady all of a sudden will not be able to throw a 20-yard out route.
Right.
It will happen.
And the thing about that is that Tom Brady has 5 rings, and Drew Brees has 1. So they really want to get him that second ring. So, you know, when you see that window closing, you're not bringing guys in that are not going to help you win that championship. You're not bringing in projects. You're bringing in guys that need to make a difference on the team. I think Davenport was a bit of a project, which was surprising, but now it's year two, and he's got to produce, and I think if he doesn't, maybe you just try to look elsewhere to get that production, but he needs to step up and make the team feel like it was worth giving up what they gave up to get him.
I agree with you. He's got stuff. He's got the whole season to do it, right? I don't need to see him dominate this week's preseason game against the Chargers. I just need to see better effort, and I need to see him not get blown up and look like he's totally not ready to be on the stage because that's what he looked like last week. Hopefully he won't look that way this week. We got to hit our final break of today's show. You're listening to the Jordy Holberg Show with co-host Raymond Parsons III and Nick Fondo right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.
Here's 3 pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holtberg Show right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. I am your guest co-host Raymond Parsons III, better known as RP3. Joining me in studio is Nick Fondo, We're putting a bow on today's show, filling in for Uncle Jordy, who needed some well-deserved R&R, so to speak. Now, Nick, you made a bold proclamation earlier on today's show, my friend. It was bold. It was daring. It was could shift the landscape of sports talk. No, I'm joking. You said that only a total of 7 players that have been inducted into Cooperstown, that is the Baseball Hall of Fame, since 1980, only 7 deserve to be in there. Give me the data. How many players have actually been enshrined since 1980?
227 players have been inducted in the Hall of Fame, the Baseball Hall of Fame, since 1980. 227 different players have been inducted into the Hall of Fame. I got it down to 8. I thought it was 7.
And, got it down to 8.
And
okay,
I'm going to be honest with you. One of my 8 is a question mark.
Okay. All right. Oh, it's a question mark. Okay. All right. I'm listening.
Okay. So first of all, let me just say, I got 5 guys that are like right on the cusp that I would hear your argument, but I don't think they're Hall of Famers. But I will hear your argument about Eddie Murray, Carl Yastrzemski, Reggie Jackson, Robin Yount, and Mike Schmidt. Now, those guys, in my opinion, are not Hall of Famers. Now, most of those guys, I didn't see their careers. Those guys played in the 70s, you know, maybe a little bit of the 80s. I was born in 81, so I didn't see those guys. So I can't really make an educated, you know, assumption on whether or not these guys are Hall of Famers. But from what I hear and everything that I've seen and read about these guys, I think that those 5 guys are probably in, but I'm leaving them out for now.
Okay.
So on my list, I have Bob Gibson, who you told me was not a first ballot Hall of Famer.
I don't think he was on the first ballot.
He was inducted in 1981. So again, I didn't see him play.
He would have been playing. He would have already passed. We'll have to look it up. I can make the argument the greatest pitcher of all time.
I think so too.
So, but I don't know. I'd have to look back if he was actually a first ballot Hall of Famer.
See, I'm well educated on Bob Gibson because I did a report on him in high school. So that's the only reason why I'm like, all right, this dude is like in. Hank Aaron, of course.
Hammer and Hank.
He was inducted in 81. I never saw him play, obviously, but he's a Hall of Famer, right? Ricky Henderson, definitely in there.
Do you know who loves him some Ricky?
Who's
Ricky.
Ricky loves Ricky. Tony Gwynn, one of the best hitters of all time. He's in, so that's 4.
Okay.
Greg Maddux, the only Brave of the, you know, the big 4, Steve Avery, Glavine, Smoltz, and Maddux. The only one that makes it is Maddux. None of those other guys are Hall of Famers. Randy Johnson is a Hall of Famer, and Ken Griffey Jr. is a Hall of Famer. So that's 7. And then I had Pedro Martinez in there. But
here
I'm
comes
gonna,
Clint. Here
I'm
comes
gonna,
a very I'm, animated Clint ready
I'm gonna
to bounce.
I'm going to move Pedro Martinez over to the other list. So Pedro Martinez is in the Reggie Jackson, Mike Schmidt list. So that's 7. So my 7 Hall of Famers since 1980, Bob Gibson, Hank Aaron, Ricky Henderson, Tony Gwynn, Greg Maddux, Randy Johnson, Ken Griffey Jr., that's it. That's the list.
I was going to say Bob Gibson was a first ballot Hall of Famer.
There you go.
He pitched all the way until 76?
The last game was 75.
Oh, wow. Jeez, I didn't know that. Okay. All right, then, yeah. Well-deserved. Okay, so Reggie Jackson is not in the Hall of Fame?
Well, like I said.
He's Mr. October.
Like I said, I never saw him play, so I can't really speak on, you know, a Hall of Famer has to just stand out to you and be like, this guy is special. He's a once-in-a-lifetime talent. He's doing things that I've never seen done before. This guy is a Hall of Famer.
Most home runs in a World Series game.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Andrew Jones had 4 home runs. Andrew Jones is not a Hall of Famer, you know?
How is Nolan Ryan not a Hall of Famer?
Oh, there it is.
Explain to me.
The Astro fan waited.
Well, it's not even about the fact that he was an Astro. It's just the fact like this guy has like so many numbers. You just look at the statistics and the data. The dude was probably one of the best pitchers of all time. I feel like he definitely deserves to be in that Hall of Fame. Your Hall of Fame is completely out of whack because you don't have that, you don't have George Brett, and you don't have Ozzie Smith. Get out of here with that mess.
Okay, are we giving a Hall of Famer a Hall of Fame for the number of years that he played? Because the only reason why Nolan Ryan's stats are still inflated is because he pitched for like 30 years.
What about Ozzie Smith? He's the Wizard.
Yeah, Ozzie Smith.
Yeah, you gotta give it to the Wizard.
What did Ozzie Smith have, like 80 home runs? No, the guy's not a Hall of Famer. Ozzie Smith is not, should even be, if there was a hallway right outside this studio, that hall, Ozzie Smith shouldn't even be in that hall, much less the Hall of Fame.
Nick, I love you, man. Thank you for filling in. Co-host Nick Fano, appreciate you, brother.
Thanks.
Uncle Jordy will be back next week. Y'all have a great weekend. Be safe out there. Ben Love, live from Rufino's on the River. Up next, right here on KDN Sports Station 103.7 The Game.